Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Yes, thank you very much. Big boys in the sky. We've got so many games in our rearview mirror. We still have three left on the weekend as we sit here on Sunday morning. Barton, my body is still healthy. I'm ready for more college football.
Yeah, we get more tonight.
Yeah.
It's Sunday morning and it's not over. That's the beauty of it. We can nap today, regroup, get some fluids in, and then go at it at 6:30 Central Time for another couple of games. So, it was a late night. There was a lot of games worth watching. I stayed up and watched the majority, almost all of that BYU, LSU just clunker, where LSU just basically, stepped on BYU's throat 1 second at a time
right.
throughout the entire game.
I mean, that was a game that I just misread very poorly.
I watched Portland State and BYU, and I was really worried about it because BYU did not look athletic against Portland State. But I just was convinced that LSU. I had a hunch LSU was going to have a lot of suspensions. They did. They had like 10. They were missing players. I thought BYU would just do enough to just get it. If they had just scored a touchdown somewhere along the way, they may have covered the 16, but it was never going to happen.
I was looking. I was watching that. We had the Howard, and we're about to mention Howard's historic upset of UNLV with Coach Rick Neuheisel here in just a little bit. I didn't make it through Hawaii though. I needed to be. I told our bosses and editors and coworkers that I needed to be fresh for a podcast, and if I was going to take it until the late nights. Out in Hawaii time, I didn't think I was going to be able to bring that A plus, that like, you know, that Cal Golden Bears show up at 9:30 and go knock off North Carolina kind of morning energy. Here's the deal. We are going to have our full recap, overreactions, underreactions, big takeaways. That is going to be coming on Monday. We want to get at least these last two games in. But before that, let's say off the top of your head, Barton, outside of the big games, was there any one thing that that you looked at? I can say that it was, and we'll elaborate on this. I think it was a bad weekend for the ACC.
Was it? I'm trying that now that you mentioned. I'm trying to think. So North Carolina had trouble. Pittsburgh won, but didn't look good. Where else are we? Where else did ACC struggle?
NC State losing to South Carolina.
That was a big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That hurt.
Florida State maybe losing DeAndre Francois. Louisville having its hands full with Purdue. North Carolina losing as a 12-point home favorite to Cal. You mentioned the fact Pitt went to overtime with Youngstown State. I mean, this is that's a selfish storyline. It's here in my backyard. It's something that I think I'm probably more in tune to, having been there at ACC Media Days when 14 ACC coaches all read from the script about how ACC's the best conference in college football. It was not a good opening weekend for that reputation.
No, and I'm feeling better about my midsummer pick of the Big Ten as the best conference of college football because they did look good.
Right. You got Maryland, Indiana, Indiana hanging with Ohio State on Thursday.
Right.
The Terps going into Austin and knocking off Texas. Michigan's defense has not lost a step.
No. Rutgers was improved against Washington.
Yeah.
Purdue put up a heck of a fight against Louisville, as you mentioned. And particularly that Big Ten East, if you got an Indiana team that shows those sort of strengths that they showed against Ohio State, they're going to be a problem for a lot of teams. And if Rutgers is the worst team in the league and they're hanging with Washington, and if Michigan State is back to being a pounding Michigan State team, I mean, 35-10 to Bowling Green isn't necessarily eye-popping, but it's still they got the job done. So, yeah, it was a good day for the Big Ten, bad day for the Big 12 too. Who as you know, Maryland won, and then Baylor. Golly.
Oh man, Liberty.
Liberty.
Liberty. Liberty. Yeah, Liberty.
Buckshot Calvert. Stephen Calvert, 447 yards passing against Baylor out of Liberty, and they only won six games last year. Liberty did. So not too encouraging for the Matt Rhule era.
No, there's a reason why that contract has 7 years on it. It's yeah. It's going to be a tough one. All right, so make sure that you subscribe. Let's get right into it. Our conversation with CBS Sports' Rick Neuheisel.
Yeah, excited about the first weekend. We kind of picked up where we left off in terms of people trying to scale Everest. Florida State succumbed to the climb again, and it was done in a traditional way. I don't know that we saw anything new with the Brian Daboll era. It looked very similar, playing to the strength of his defense, holding the defense held Florida State 250 yards, and obviously, the seminal miscues there in the third quarter were their death knell. But impressive again by Alabama defense.
Well, that's go ahead, Barton.
Yeah, well, I'm curious to hear your impressions of the evolution of Jalen Hurts, because it was really kind of the same quarterback last year as we saw last year. Do you
right.
think that's a product Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It was very much the same. 10 for 18 yeah. for, 96 yards? And,
yep. yeah.
you know, one of those was a 50-yard touchdown pass. Three of 15 on third down. I mean, it looked very reminiscent of what we saw at the end of the season last year. But I will give Florida State a lot of credit for that. I thought Florida State defensively was outstanding. Derwin James has added some spice to that. Making everybody play a notch higher, and he was kind of the shadow for Jalen Hurts. He was kind of sitting there, and when Jalen Hurts tried to make plays with his legs, he was there. They were very sure in the way of tackling. So I thought Florida State defensively was really good. What they hold Alabama, 268 yards or something like that?
Yep.
So it was really impressive there. But, you know, when you're in a prize fight like that, and Jimbo Fisher's been in a lot of them, when you get a short field, J.K. Scott had that kind of shank punt in the first half. I think the score was 10-7 at the time.
Yeah.
And they had the ball at the 30-yard line. And Jimbo tried to reverse and lost 9 yards out of field goal range. You can't have that happen. You can't squander that opportunity to get points. Because as we have come to realize, unless you have Deshaun Watson on your roster, it's hard to score against these guys. And that to me was no one I don't know picked up on that. But that to me couldn't happen at that portion of the game. And then obviously turnovers never can happen. And that special teams performance by the Seminoles last night was ugly.
In terms of Hurts, like you having coached and shaped quarterbacks before, you know, everyone was hoping for a jump from true freshman to sophomore, would do you think we would have seen that in game one? Do you think this is still something where okay, this can become a different Jalen Hurts this fall, or do you think what we have is what we got on Saturday night?
My friends who have been to watch practice say it is a much newer and improved Jalen Hurts. We did not see that last night.
Yeah,
but I think as I just said, we got to give some credit where credit's due with respect to Florida State's defense.
Sure.
And the other thing that I think I noticed last night, you know, very little in the way of what I'd call a full pattern, very little in that in terms of releasing five receivers into a pattern and protecting the five guys. Most of the time they were leaving guys in so that Jalen would have a little bit more time, or it was a play action opportunity. So his reads were still pretty vanilla, very reminiscent of a year ago.
Yeah, I think Calvin Ridley was still the only receiver that got passes, right? Like, they only ended up throwing to one receiver.
He's the only one that caught more than one ball. That's exactly
yeah.
right. And there was not a tight end in featured in the offense. And, you know, balls, again, thrown behind the line of scrimmage, which I think he led the country in completions behind the line of scrimmage last year. It was right up there. it looked very similar. So it begs the question, how influential is Nick Saban on the offensive coordinator? Because that didn't look different last night.
Well, it's tough to, you know, the day finished with that colossal matchup in Atlanta, but the headlines really starting a little bit early. And Coach Neuhausel, I wanted, in terms of Tom Herman and the Texas Longhorns, having been through that spot, can you speak to maybe anything that you saw or that you can touch on from the challenges of arriving at a place, having a lot of expectations, and the extraneous, you know, the energy, everything that's going on around your program going into that debut? Because the way that the Longhorns played in that spot, I think that a lot of folks were looking and sort of shrugging their shoulders. And even though there's been a change at the sideline, you know, a lot of that was what we saw at the end of last year with Charlie Strong. You know, is it tough to step into a spot and expect, as Tom Herman said in his own post-game press conference, he said, we can't sprinkle fairy dust around here and get everything perfect again?
Well, he's right. But what we're feeling is the frustration of I'm going to call them spoiled, because when you're in Texas, you have the best of everything. The spoiled Texas football fan. They have, you know, this college football playoff era has started without them, and they can't stand it. They can't stand it. There were two people yesterday that were watching that game and smiling to themselves. One was Charlie Strong. Now, he'll never admit it, but one was Charlie Strong. The other was Joe Oliva, who tried to get Tom Herman and then realized he couldn't outbid Texas and had to be smiling. See, it's a little bit of fool's gold. Now, that's not to say that Tom Herman's not going to be a fantastic coach.
Sure.
He's been a head coach for two seasons, and I'm sure he can change the fortunes of Texas. And as a matter of fact, if you're looking for a silver lining, and this is with tongue-in-cheek, they went from 93rd in defense last year. Now, right now, after 1 week, they're 92nd in defense. So, yeah, they're moving in the right direction. The bottom line is that was shocking. You know, everybody expected everything to be fixed immediately, and Shane Buechele had a decent game. Offensively, but still messy, and defensively, little Terrell Pigram, and we'll hope that he's okay to come back. It didn't look good, but he was electric. But you can imagine what that defense is going to face the rest of the year in terms of Big 12 passers. And by the way, in the world of Big 12 passing, Mason Rudolph was 20 for 24 the other night on Thursday night for three touchdowns and over 300 yards passing. Nick Szymanek for Texas Tech yesterday was 26 of 30 for 384 and three touchdowns in the Red Raiders opener. And Baker Mayfield almost pitched a perfect game. He was 19 of 20 for 329 and three touchdowns.
I think Kyler Murray came in behind him and was like 14 of 15 too. Like collectively, I think they only missed two passes.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, I mean, that's amazing. Those three guys in the same league. I mean, that I don't know what that quarterback rating is if you put all three of those numbers together, but it's off the charts. It's breaking the computer somewhere.
A whole bunch. On Thursday night, what was your where were your eyes as we were bouncing between Oklahoma State just, you know, falling into its full offensive powers, assuming everything that we could have assumed from Mason Rudolph, one of the best quarterbacks in the country and one of the best receiving cores, not just James Washington, but that whole group. But then also, same time, watching Ohio State and Indiana, what really stood out to you from that first Thursday night of action?
The first half of the Ohio State-Indiana game was interesting to watch. Indiana threw 40 passes. They were 25 of 40 for like 284. I mean, and Ohio State played one coverage. They played man three the entire night, at least the entire first half. And I think they thought they could get away with that in anticipation of Oklahoma in week two. But Richard Leggo proved that he's, you know, an NFL caliber guy, or at least going to get to a camp. By throwing balls. And by the way, that Simi Cobbs, that guy's a really good player.
Yeah.
Really good player. So that was a fun. It was like watching period six in practice, one on one, because he was going back, throwing to his first choice, and hitting balls against press coverage. And when you're having to cover and not able to use your eyes, it's hard. And they were up to the challenge, and so made a real game of it. The mistake that you make sometimes by going warp speed offensively is, do you have the defense that can go warp speed on defense and have enough guys that can stay upright towards the final minutes of the game? The second half, that defense wore down, and because you weren't taking any clock off, they were going to be playing. I don't know how many plays there were in that game, but it was an enormous number. And because of it, Indiana wore down. Greg Schiano and company decided to open the playbook, did more things defensively, confused him. And most notably, JT Barrett finally had a clean pocket to throw from, and he looked pretty good in the second half doing it.
So that's interesting. You think that it sounds like that they kept it simple coverage-wise just to make sure Ohio that you know they could survive that?
I'm wondering. Yeah. I mean, what is that, 23 in a row over Indiana?
Yeah.
24. I mean, it's a big number. But they played one coverage.
Yeah.
And Indiana had, you know, some formational things that got guys picked off, and you know, they threw the touchdown down there in the second half to the tight end on a little pick play. If that's all you're getting, I remember we used to play against Arizona and what they called the Desert Swarm when Teddy Bruschi was playing that.
Yeah.
That's all they played. Well, if that's all they're playing, you can have a game plan if you keep things simple to stop it. And Indiana did, but when Schiano and company opened the playbook and got to a number of different coverages, it confused them and their defense wilted.
Well, you know, we go from some good quarterback play to some really bad quarterback play. I'm curious your thoughts on that Michigan-Florida game. You know, is Michigan's defense that good, or is Florida's quarterbacks and offense that bad? What's your biggest takeaway from some pretty interesting developments in that game?
I think we have to give Don Brown a huge amount of credit. Don Brown, the defensive coordinator for Michigan, was the top defense in the country on a Boston College team that went 0-8 2 years ago in the ACC. That's almost impossible, but he did it. Then he goes and he gets the quality personnel that he inherited at Michigan and is the number one defense or right at the top of the list again. And you know, shows that the Boston College thing wasn't a fluke. They graduate everybody, or seemingly everybody, on that defense, and then he does it again. Now, is it Don Brown, or is it Doug Nussmeier and Jim McElwain have, as a collaborative team, have yet to find any rhythm offensively? It's both, right?
Yeah.
Because that looked, and I said it when they went and got Malik Zaire, if they're going to change and play a quarterback run driven offense, this will be exciting stuff. That to me is why Malik Zaire should have gone to Florida. If they're not going to, if they're going to be a West Coast offense and play like they've played, they're going to require a great deal amount from their offensive line, which we've heard has been so much better. I can't blame it all on say that it's not going to happen after one game, but it didn't look much better last night. Obviously, the suspensions hurt. When Callaway and Scarlett are not in the game, that's an issue. But it didn't look very good. But for pick sixes, that would have been a terrible, terrible blowout.
So I've kind of got a theory, and tell me if you agree or disagree based on having managed reps in practice before, managed quarterback battles. So they brought in Malik Zaire and expected him to start. But they had Felipe Franks, who had a pretty solid spring, you know, redshirt freshman. He ends up winning the job. But had they just sort of pushed their chips forward with Felipe Franks in the first place, let him be the guy throughout the summer, do you think they'd be in a better position right now? Or is that a little bit overblown that, like, splitting reps three ways, having a true quarterback battle
Everybody wants competition to be fair. Everybody wants it. But fair is where they give a blue ribbon to a pig. Okay, you cannot share reps equally and get ready for a game, especially a game of that magnitude. You can't do it. My son's coaching at Texas A&M, and they've got these two freshman quarterbacks, and we'll find out who's starting today, whether it's Starkle or Kellen Mond. But you can't go 50-50 because neither one will be ready.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't do it. Even though you want it to be simple and all that stuff, you're going to either limit your inventory or you're going to limit their preparation, and those are both nightmares waiting to happen. And that's exactly what I think happened at Florida.
And the irony of the Florida thing is the only guy among the three in that locker room that actually won five games last year is the guy sitting on the bench, and Luke Del Rio. I don't know if they'd be any better with him in there or not.
Let me say this. There was no reason, none, to go get Malik Zaire if you were not going to change your offense to suit his skill set. Because, number one, he's not that guy, in my estimation. Now, they can have a different opinion, and that's what makes the world go round. But, number two, just as you pointed out, he's going to take reps away from kids that need him to get going.
Things looked a little bit scary for the USC Trojans there for a hot second. A PJ Fleckless Western Michigan comes into their house carrying a lead. Huge performance from Ronald Jones, 159 yards, three scores. USC ends up making it, pulling away near the end of the game. Is this a spot where if you are a USC fan who is looking at 2017 as a return to Pac-12 championships, as a college football playoff contention season, do you get nervous about this, or do you wait until the Stanford game before you really have some strong observations and opinions?
You better get nervous about this. And in one particular number, that 268 yards rushing.
Yep. 263.
That can't happen. That can't happen against a playoff-bound defense. If it does, you're in harm's way. I thought both Washington and USC from the Pac-12 sputtered out of the gates. Now, that doesn't mean they can't be great teams. But the most impressive team an opening weekend out of the Pac-12 was Stanford. And Stanford is really good defensively. If Stanford can corral SC's offense, which didn't look as potent as maybe we might have imagined, it ended up with 50 points, so we'll pump the brakes there a little bit. But if Bryce Love can have a kind of game that, was it Jarvion Franklin yesterday for Western Michigan?
Yeah.
If he can have that kind of game, the way Stanford knows how to put games away and can be a boa constrictor and just suck the life out of you, SC's in harm's way. SC's in harm's way as early as this next weekend.
I came out of this weekend looking at that Pac-12, and I talk with Barton about this a lot, but, you know, the nine-game schedule, 12-team league, there's very few places to hide when in conference play. And if there was a popular assumption with the Trojans leading the way that was going to be the conference champion, I think that October and November conference play and head-to-head battles and the division title battles, I think these just got a lot more interesting coming out. And we still, we're recording this Sunday morning. We still need to see UCLA on Sunday night. But this,
right.
I'm coming right out of this thinking that the Pac-12 is going to be one of the most intriguing battles in terms of trying to see who from a group of about four or five teams is going to end up getting to the conference championship game and then even getting a chance to insert their name into the playoff conversation.
Neither Oregon or Washington State played anybody of note, but they both look good.
Yep.
I thought Colorado, I saw Colorado State's offense with my own eyes. And Colorado, to hold them to 3 points, kind of makes everybody take notice that despite losing a bunch of guys on that defensive side, they still look pretty good. So they have all their playmakers back, minus Sefo Lufau. So to me, that's a very competitive league. And especially since that Washington and the Trojans, who everybody assumed was going to meet in the championship game, both look beatable.
Down in the, I don't know if you stayed up for the late game, but LSU just sort of
put a headlock
arms
on
and
BYU.
Legs.
Yeah.
So much for the theory that BYU was saving their offense.
Right. I hope they got some for next week. I mean, this is LSU clearly dominated them offensively, or defensively, and they didn't really need to do a lot to win offensively. But this is our first look at Matt Canada for the Tigers. Any initial impressions on him as an offensive coordinator? Is LSU going to finally have the offense to make a run at Alabama?
Well, I think it's a work in progress, right? We'll wait and see. Certainly in week one, and remember, they're playing a quarterback that had minor back surgery, as if there is anything like that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to kind of tread lightly. But Matt Canada's job at Pitt last year, I thought, was really good in terms of how he utilized Nathan Peterman and got him into – I mean, that win over Clemson was a thing of beauty in terms of run, pass, RPOs, and the like. And that's the kind of offensive performance you're going to need to beat a team that is complete on defense like Alabama. That is exactly what you're gonna need. So, to me, I did not see the game, but obviously an impressive beginning to the Matt Canada era.
Before we let you go here, Coach Neuheisel, is there one thing that we spend almost 2 months previewing these games, and we've got to start doing our research, in early July, and we put a lot of focus on what we're going to expect, and we pour over these depth charts. We talk to coaches. We get sources from the camps. Is there any one thing that we maybe haven't talked about or that you want to elaborate on further that you think really surprised you, that made you come out of the first weekend and just say, oh, and almost make you reshape what you thought about a team or a storyline for the 2017 season?
Well, on behalf of the Fired Football Coaches of America, I want to give a shout-out to Mike London.
Oh, yeah, Howard!
Yeah. Mike London, the head coach for Howard, goes in as a 45-point underdog and beats UNLV in an opening game where Kalen Newton has 330 yards and three touchdowns, and they win 43-40. That, to me, is an astonishing story, and it speaks to coach's spirit and how you make kids believe. And then you can't let the weekend go without two stories. Mike London winning that game and Jake Olson, the blind kid at SC, snapping the ball because it's been a lifelong dream, and going in there and getting to snap a ball on an extra point. We all remember him being the little kid in Pete Carroll's locker room and always dreaming of this, knowing that he's going to have surgery to lose his eyesight. And that, to me, if you don't get a little tear in your eye watching that story, then you're not the football fan you need to be. It is a great life story. I think both those stories are wonderful and the kind of stuff that makes our game the best game.
He is Rick Neuheisel. You can see him on CBS Sports' coverage of college football, and he will be back with us here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast later this season. Coach, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. Take care. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks again to Coach Neuheisel. Thanks again to Barton Simmons. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. Subscribers get them first. That's again, the next episode will be Monday with a full recap that includes the Sunday games and our we will judge our takes. Are they too hot? Are they just right? We will be giving you much, much more. Later in the week, we will be linking up with Las Vegas with some friends from Sportsline for a view, the oddsmaker's view of things. And then, of course, we will be giving our week 2 picks with Tom Fernelli. So subscribe, because as you know, subscribers get the episodes first. Thank you.